If you really want to produce a video that points to reconciliation, do you do it by untruths? Do you do it by exaggerations? Do you do it by demonizing a people? I say no.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want you to picture this, all right? I invite you over to my house, and I show you a video, maybe an hour and a half long, and it details all the terrible things that my neighbors have done to me and my family. It details atrocities they have committed. It details the evil things they have done and the evil stance they take. And I take you to see my kids, and they're starving. And there's no food because these neighbors are stealing the food and doing these horrific things. And I take in another room, and there's a kid, and he's got a hand chopped off. And that's what I have. He tried to get some of the food, and they chopped the hand off. And then at the end, I said, now, the reason I'm doing this is because I want to promote reconciliation and peace in our neighborhood. And I want to promote an attitude of respect to all people in my neighborhood. You think, well, you just demonize your neighbors. If what you're saying is true, you just demonize your neighbors, and you've told me how terrible they are and how evil they are, and all we should have is justice against them because you have been victims. Obviously, that would not be a way to promote reconciliation. And yet, the video with God on our side, which says its goal is to promote reconciliation and an attitude of justice towards both Jews and Palestinians together with a Christian attitude, does the very thing I'm talking about, demonizes the people of Israel, demonizes the modern state of Israel, presents everything in the worst possible light, in the most unbalanced way, and even with things that are inaccurate and, sadly, untrue. And it does it in the name of reconciliation. We're going to finish our critique of the video with God on our side. Let me say again, as I said last week, I believe those involved were sincere. I don't believe that they intentionally were trying to deceive. I believe that they have been misled in the process of what they're doing and are operating in a spirit that is not ultimately a spirit of reconciliation, at least what is reflected on this video. Michael Brown, great to be with you. I flew through the night to make sure I was back here in time. Didn't get much sleep, but you know, the red eye is called the red eye because you don't get much sleep on it, flying in from LA here to Charlotte. Got home, got a few hours, good rest, and ready to go. Here's the number to call, and let me tell you in particular who I'd like to hear from. I don't know if you're out there or if you want to call, but I'd like to hear from you if you differ with me. I'd like to hear from you if you saw with God on our side and you differ with me, or you agree with it, or it raised genuine questions for you. I'd like to hear from you. Again, I've invited everyone involved with God on our side, the principal figures involved with it, to join me on the air. Perhaps in the future they will. Up to now, they haven't. But if you saw the video, if you agree with the content, if it stirred you, it raised questions for you, or if you just out and out disagree with, quote, Christian Zionism, give me a call. I'd much rather hear from those who differ with me than those who agree, although the phones are open to everybody. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. If you click on the Line of Fire, you'll find resources that relate to today's broadcast. All right. I don't have time to play this clip now. We'll play it right after our first break. But I want to tell you what, to me, is the most tragic thing about this. At a time when anti-Semitism continues to rise worldwide, at a time when Jew hatred is at heights around the world similar to the heights it was at right before the Holocaust, it's a shame that those wanting to do what's right in God's eyes and wanting to stand for Christian values and principles put out a documentary that only fuels the fires of anti-Semitism. I'm really not overstating that. So we'll open this up. We'll talk it through right here on The Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I want to dive right into the issues, further issues with the video with God on our side. We looked at it last week, last Thursday. Thursdays we focus on Israel-Jewish-related issues here on The Line of Fire. We are finishing this critique today. Again, I do this with the spirit of advancing truth. I do this with the spirit of advancing God's purposes. I do this with the spirit of seeing God's goodness poured out on everybody, those who identify as Palestinians, Arabs from all backgrounds, Jews from all backgrounds. I welcome criticism of the modern state of Israel, and I am in constant conflict and interaction with my own Jewish people as a Jewish follower of Jesus. And many Messianic Jews in the land challenge the government if in any way it mistreats Messianic Jews or restricts rights of Messianic Jews. So bottom line is, I am not one saying everything Israel does is right. I am not one saying that Israel is exempt from correction. I'm saying that you don't put out something unbalanced. You don't put out something with extremist views. You don't put out something that demonizes one people in the goal of undemonizing another people and promoting reconciliation. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire, or Facebook, Ask Dr. Brown. Just like that page. All right, a couple things, and I want to play first of a number of clips for you. Last week, when I was on with a guest from Israel, one of our grads, Shani Ferguson, I said to her, how many Arabs are there living in the land of Israel proper, not in the so-called occupied territories, not in West Bank or Gaza, but in what is recognized universally as the state of Israel? She said about 1 million. Well, in my head, I thought it was 1.5 million, roughly 1.5 million. But I went with the lower number. I wasn't 100% sure it was 1.5 million. I was pretty sure it was. I went with the lower number because I didn't want to exaggerate. Because the point I was making is you've got the more, the better. The higher the number, the better. The higher the number, the more it would have supported the point I was making, namely that these are citizens in Israel, Arabs. And they have voting rights. They're in parliament. They're judges in the courts of Israel and so on. They are Arab Israelis or Israeli Arabs. So there is no question whatsoever that they are living in the land and they have full rights to do what they want to do. And many would say they have more liberties to free speech than they would in any other Arab country in the world or Muslim country in the world. And so that was my point. The more, the better. So that's why I went with a lower number just to play it safe, even though I was pretty sure it was 1.5 million. Somebody gets on the Line of Fire blog and accuses me and Shani of intentionally falsifying the number. The higher the number, the better, the more it underscored the point I was making. Before I just give you a little bit more truth of what happened, the beginning of the, quote, refugee problem, I want you to hear what recently took place in a mall in Australia. And these types of protests and calls for boycotts of Israel are spreading now to different countries around the world. All right. You heard it. We will boycott Israel. This is spreading now. So Israelis are very active in the malls. They'll sell products from the Dead Sea. They're very social people. And it's a great place for them to be. They travel to different countries. They work in the malls. So now they're getting kicked out of malls. Why? In the name of justice. When atrocities 100 times worse are being committed day in and day out against Israel, or where Israel has to stand with all of its might to keep terrorists out who want to murder their children, there's no national or international outcry. And I would dare say that if there were Palestinians at the malls selling products, that there would not be a boycott of Palestinians when there is state-sponsored violence against Israel. We just need to recognize that this is a spiritual battle, friends, that this is a spiritual and demonic battle, and we cannot just look at it in social terms alone, although we must look at the social issues and we must look at the issues of justice. And ultimately, I'm 100% sure the only way there'll be lasting peace in the Middle East is through Jesus, and ultimately through his return. But let's go back to this issue of the refugee problem. 866-34-TRUTH, if you disagree with, quote, Christian Zionism, if you believe Israel today is not a fulfillment of prophecy, if you believe that Israel today is guilty of atrocities against the Palestinians, if you saw the With God on Our Side video and agree with it, I would like to hear from you. I'd like to get some opposing perspectives today. I promise to be gracious and fair to you. 866-34-TRUTH. I know it can be intimidating sometimes to call, and what are you going to say? Hey, just air your views. That's all I'm asking for. 866-348-7884. Okay. Why is there a refugee problem in the first place? Why is there a refugee problem? I mentioned that it was disturbing to watch this video and find no mention of the Holocaust when we're talking about justice and we're giving a historical perspective. Well, actually, at 1 hour and 14 minutes, 1 hour and 14 minutes into the video, as far as I could tell, maybe I missed something earlier, that's the first reference to the Holocaust. First reference to the Holocaust. I'll come back and share the significance of that with you in a moment. But I want to give you this important background. Let's fast forward to 1947. And now there is the official recognition. There's going to be two states, and Jerusalem will be under international control. And the Jews celebrated over that. It was not what they wanted. It was not the fullness of what they wanted. In fact, it was going to have ongoing difficulties, but the fact that there would be a Jewish state after the horrors of the Holocaust, after all the dispersion for so many centuries, that there would be a recognized Jewish state was amazing. It was not amazing. It was not positive to the Arab population and to the surrounding nations. You have to understand that Jerusalem and the Middle East there in Israel had been under Islamic control. It is a major issue when something that was under Islamic control is no longer under Islamic control. As Britain and the Great Britain and the nations were now going to decide for the Jews to be back there is a major, major defeat, a major, major disaster, not just in terms of who's going to live side by side, how it's going to work. You're talking about a major disaster. And hence, when the state was recognized, Israel was now attacked by five surrounding Arab nations. And many rightly say it was only by God's grace and mercy that they made it. Now, you say, yeah, but you don't know all the Jewish sentiments before that. You don't know all the Jewish plans to start that have a war to kick the Arabs out. No, false. Absolutely false. I mentioned there was a quote that's a completely bogus quote attributed to Ben-Gurion. David Ben-Gurion mentioned that last week. Let me take this a little further, friends. All right. The idea that Ben-Gurion and the Jewish leaders then were opting for a transfer solution. In other words, what we have to do, the way this is going to be set up, we're going to have 60% of the population Jewish, 40% Arab. We need to transfer them out. We need to kick them out, and war is the best way to do it. Forget the war quote. That's bogus, non-existent, falsified. And it's there right on the screen and with God on our side. So, dear friends involved with that video, for integrity's sake, at the very least, pull that quote, acknowledge the error, and distribute a disclaimer. Let's go for there are more things really that need to be pulled and more of a disclaimer that needs to be issued. There was a proposal presented to the Jewish people where there was a discussion about, and presented to all sides in the late 1930s, how about transfer of peoples and properties? You go from here to here, you go from here to here. So in that context, the Jewish leaders discussed it. Once that was scrapped, it was dropped. It was dropped by the Jewish leaders, and there's no record of Ben-Gurion or others bringing it up again. So this was Ben-Gurion's vision. All right, are you ready for this? We must think in terms of a state, in terms of independence, in terms of full responsibility for ourselves and for others. In our state, there will be non-Jews as well, and all of them will be equal citizens, equal in everything without any exception. That is, the state will be their state as well. The attitude of the Jewish state to its Arab citizens will be an important factor, though not the only one, in building good neighborly relations with the Arab states. If the Arab citizens will feel at home in our state, and if his status will not be in the least different from that of a Jew, and perhaps better than the status of the Arab in an Arab state, and if the state will help him in a truthful and dedicated way to reach the economic, social, and cultural level of the Jewish community, then Arab distrust will accordingly subside, and a bridge to a Semitic Jewish-Arab alliance will be built. The striving for a Jewish-Arab alliance necessitates us to fulfill several obligations, which we are obliged to do in any event, full and real equality, de jure and de facto, of all the state citizens, graduated equalization of the economic, social, and cultural standard of living of the Arab community with that of the Jewish community, recognition of the Arab language as the language of the Arab citizens, the administration, courts of justice, and above all, schools, municipal autonomy in villages and cities. That was the vision of David Ben-Gurion.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right. Do you want the truth? Nothing but the truth? I hope so. That's what we're seeking to do here on the Line of Fire today as we talk about the wrong information on the video with God on our side. It's important because it really demonizes the Jewish people, terribly demonizes Israel. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, in particular if you differ with me, all right? Online, askdrbrown.org. There are references made, a pastor right here in Charlotte who I need to reach out to and chat with, get his perspective, share mine with him. Originally he was from South Africa, and he talks about what's happening in Israel as apartheid on steroids. Apartheid on steroids. And it's pointed out, hey, in the West Bank, there's one system for the Israeli settlers in the occupied territories, and there's another system for the Palestinians living there. So how did that happen when David Ben-Gurion and others had such a lofty vision of how we can all get along together? I've got quotes from him from the late 1930s as well, detailed, where he laid out his lines of action. And the goal ultimately was to bring more and more Jews into the land. There's plenty of room for them, so that they would have a strong enough majority. Remember, the Israeli land is 1/650th, 1/650th of the surrounding Arab land. So the goal was to bring in many more Jews from around the world to settle in Israel so that there'd be a strong Jewish majority, while at the same time upholding the rights and the dignity of the Arabs that were living there. So in point of fact, the refugee problem, yes, it is a result of war in 1947-1948, but you must come to grips with the fact that it is primarily Arab inflicted, and that there was no effort, no attempt to absorb the refugees. Remember, 700,000-800,000 Jews fled from surrounding Muslim countries with the founding of the state of Israel. Who took them in? Israel did. The Arab refugees, those that we would call Palestinians today, when they fled, who took them in? Nobody. They could have been taken in. I'm not saying it would have been their first choice, because many had lived for centuries where they were in what was called Palestine. But the fact is, you had war, you had a refugee problem, one side solved it, the other side exacerbated it. And hey, the worse that refugee problem can be, and I've got quotes in my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, that are very revealing. People looking at this and saying there's no attempt to solve this problem from the Arab side. The worse it can be, the worse it makes Israel look, the more demonic, ugly, horrific they are. Look, Ben-Gurion, in his vision, his lines of action. Every religious community will enjoy complete freedom to make its own practicing arrangements without undermining public order and the foundations of morality. Holy days of each religious community will be recognized as official resting days of this community. There will be no discrimination among citizens of the Jewish state on the basis of race, religion, sex, or class. Hebrew will be the state language, but every national minority will be given full freedom to use its own language in educating its children and in managing the rest of its internal needs. The Arab minority will be able to use the Arabic language not only in its educational, religious, and communal institutions, but also in its contacts with all state institutions, and every district, town, or village where Arabs form a majority. All government announcements will be published in Arabic as well. Until the barriers between the standards of living of the Jewish majority and the Arab minority will have been blurred, the state will ensure a fair percentage of its working places and services to Arab civil servants and workers at equal salaries to Jewish civil servants and workers. In addition, Arab representatives will be ensured a fair percentage in the state's elected institutions without institutionalizing sectarian elections. What happened? Was it that suddenly the Israelis became demons? Was it suddenly the Israelis said we're going to oppress these people? No, there was a war and people saying you will not stay in this land. Look, what is the most conspicuous sticking point right now between the Israelis and the Palestinians in terms of a two-state solution? What is the biggest sticking point? What does Prime Minister Netanyahu continue to repeat, continue to ask for? Very simply this, that Prime Minister Abbas would say, we recognize Israel as a Jewish state. There are lots of other issues, lots of other things to work through. But this is a major, major sticking point. You say they still will not recognize Israel as a Jewish state? Correct. Yes, correct. The Palestinian Authority will not. And Hamas continues. Hamas continues to have in its charter the goal of the destruction of Israel. Now, on the video, we are told that you can't judge the Palestinians by Hamas or by Palestinian Authority or by other radical Islamic groups. And I'm sure that not all Palestinians share the full theology and ideology of the radical Islamic groups. But remember, these are their elected governments. And check this out. Story in the Jerusalem reports, Jerusalem Post reports this. 6 in 10 Palestinians reject two-state solution. In other words, Israel does not have a right. The Jewish people do not have a right to the state. 6 in 10. 73% of 1,010 Palestinians surveyed in the West Bank, Gaza, agree with hadith quoted in Hamas charter about the need to kill Jews hiding behind stones and trees. This is kind of an end-time thing. Jews are behind stones and trees. The hadith says, Islamic tradition says, that the trees will speak and say, there's a Jew hiding behind me, kill him. 73% of those surveyed said they agreed with it. Only 1 in 3 Palestinians, 34%, accepts two states for two peoples as the solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, according to an intensive face-to-face survey in Arabic of 1,010 Palestinian adults in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, completed this week by American pollster Stanley Greenberg. The Israeli project is trying to reach out to the Arab world to promote people-to-people peace. The poll appears to indicate that the organization has a difficult task ahead. 66% said the Palestinians' real goal should be to start with a two-state solution, but then move it to all being one Palestinian state. Asked about the fate of Jerusalem, 92% said it should be the capital of Palestine. 1% said the capital of Israel. 3% the capital of both, and 4% a neutral international city. Friends, you're not getting a true perspective of what's happening in Israel and the Middle East from this video. Got a lot more issues to discuss, a lot more concerns to raise. Those that will be leaving us after this half hour, remember to go to the website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. You'll be able to listen to 2 hours of programming about this. And those in D.C. listening on WAVA-FM, remember that all 2 hours of the Line of Fire are re-aired from 6 to 8 p.m. on WAVA-AM, so you can catch all 2 hours later in the day. Can I ask you, if you believe in what we're doing, to be praying for us, praying with us, and perhaps you can stand with us with your support, with your financial support, to help us take this broadcast around America. Give us a call at 1-800-278-9978. Your one-time gift or your monthly support as a torchbearer, help us reach the lost sheep of the house of Israel with the good news of Jesus. Help us raise up, send out missionaries around the world. Help us stand for moral cultural revolution. So give us a call. Stand with us. 1-800-278-9978.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for choosing to be with me on the air today. When I was in California this week, the rental car that I had happened to have Sirius XM, so different stations you could get. I just was looking around, seeing what was there. Amazingly, it's a station that just plays Grateful Dead music 24/7. Oh, some other stuff. Just amazed to see it. And it reminded me of how much is out there on the radio, all the AM, FM stations, and then the satellite radio. Reminded me of what it means when you tune in to listen to me, that you're making a choice to be listening here and not to someone else or something else. So I appreciate that. We want every minute to count as much as possible. 866-34-TRUTH. If you differ with me, if you differ with Christian Zionism, if you differ with the idea that Israel today is fulfillment of prophecy, if you differ with my critique of With God on Our Side video, then by all means weigh in. I don't know, I'll get a lot of you to do it because some folks can feel intimidated or afraid. I'll try to manipulate the conversation. Hey, we don't have unlimited time, but I'll do my best to give you a hearing. Yes, I'm inviting people who differ. 866-348-7884. Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. Okay, the video talks at length about the separation barrier, the wall that has been built to keep terrorism out. A spokesman for the International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem says that it reduced terrorism and suicide bombing almost 98% overnight. Of course, it's heavily critiqued throughout the video. You see pictures of it, images of it. And again, some of the voices, Norman Finkelstein, is one of the most radical anti-Israel Jewish. He's Jewish himself. His parents were Holocaust survivors. One of the most radical anti-Israel scholars. I mean, you couldn't find a more radical voice, and yet he's quoted throughout as if he's the authority and no one differs. So he says, yeah, you have a right to build the wall in your own territory, not someone else's. And others ask the question, look, you have the green line. Why not put the wall up in the green line? So it's just, here's what separates the territories. Why run it right in the middle of certain territories? Well, what's the answer? According to Finkelstein, the wall's been built to appropriate more Palestinian territories, period. The wall has been built to appropriate more Palestinian territories. And there's no answer to that, no refutation of that. Again, this is in the name of reconciliation, this video. Palestinian family, which at the end you hear moving testimony from this Palestinian Christian, how God moved on him to forgive when he was in America. To forgive the Israelis, and it's a wonderful testimony. I'm thinking the whole video is building sentiment against, is building hostility against when you get to the end where there's a testimony of forgiveness. But here's just a simple question. There's no showing at all of the victims of Palestinian terrorism. No interviewing of the families that have been bereaved. No showing the funerals where they're burying the wife and three kids and the husband's there mourning, where school buses have been attacked and children killed in cold blood and then showing Palestinian citizens celebrating that. Not a hint of that, just this terrible wall. Why not ask the Israelis, why did you build it where you built it? Perhaps they were not trying to appropriate more Palestinian territory, because if there's a two-state solution, ultimately, they would have to deal with that wall issue. Could it be that they knew strategically this is where they needed to put it to keep the terrorists out, and it has worked? Remember, there was no need for a wall until it was the only solution to keep murderers of their men, women, and children out. Not a hint of the justice issue here. Not a hint of the atrocities against the Jews. Why?
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, that number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, to get into discussion about the With God on Our Side video or the larger question of Israel back in the land, fulfillment of prophecy. How should Christians relate to this? Online, AskDrBrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. If you don't have my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, I urge you to purchase a copy. You can get it on any of the online Christian bookstores or from our website. I really urge you to purchase a copy. It will be perhaps the most eye-opening book you have ever read and directly related to this issue as well. And Salim Munayer, a Palestinian Christian who speaks a number of times on the video and then very articulately at the end about reconciliation and working together. I will do my best to get a direct message to Salim, but sir, if you are ever in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, aside from the fact that I'd love to sit down with you and talk face to face so we can share our hearts one with another, but I would love for you to address the students in our ministry school and to join me on the air, not in a hostile way, but so that we can share our different perspectives with the goal of truth and reconciliation. Let's just play clip number four, then I'm going to go to the phones. This is Professor Gary Burge, respected New Testament scholar at Wheaton, and a very strong opponent of the idea that Israel in the land today is a fulfillment of prophecy. And something I'm going to come back to later, either this hour or in the next hour, he makes the statement that we can look at Israel today and the situation in the Middle East today through the eyes of justice, or we can look at it. He says, am I going to look at the Middle East as a Christian and look at it through the lens of prophecy, or am I going to look at it at the Middle East as a Christian, look at it through the lens of justice? My question is, why not both? If God has said things in his word, or if he's doing things in the land, and if there are issues of justice along with that, why not look at it through both eyes? Shouldn't we ask the question, what is God doing? What is God saying? What is happening? And evaluate all sides. So I want you to hear what he claims about the justice issues in Israel. Go ahead.
When I think about the biblical view of justice in the world, many of my evangelical friends immediately have a reflex. They think that when I begin talking about social justice or social concerns, I'm beginning to sound liberal. I don't want to lead to that result at all. Instead, what I think justice means is that we treat people as God would treat them. That's what justice means. And therefore, I want to promote a set of values that are kingdom values wherever I find them inside of the world. I find those kingdom values in the prophets of the Old Testament. I find those kingdom values in the Sermon on the Mount. And so when I look inside of the Middle East, I ask myself, how are kingdom values, how are the values of Jesus being promoted in this place? Are Palestinians, for instance, being viewed as men and women who are loved by God? Are Palestinians being viewed at least as the way Jesus viewed Samaritans in his own day? In other words, when Jesus met Samaritans, the Samaritan woman of John 4, he treated her with utmost respect. When he met people who were living on the margins of his society, like lepers, for instance, he treated them with respect. He touched them. He embraced them. So as I look at the Middle East today and I look at the Israeli-Palestinian issue, I want to be known as someone who does not simply translate this story through prophecy. I want to be someone who promotes the goodness that God has for all men and women, regardless of their background.
Of course, I agree with the call for justice. The fact is, if the Israeli society wanted to found things on justice from the beginning and have the Arabs living there as co-equal citizens, as about 1.5 million live there today in the midst of Israel, we just don't hear about that. Why then this unfair view towards Israel? Why only taking one side? Why even at times inaccurate scholarship? Even a quote in a Gary Burge book of Ben-Gurion, which is a misconstrued quote, which if you go back to the original sources would be evident, and then that gets requoted in other books. There is a bias here. just as there can be an accusation that there is a Christian Zionist bias, well, the fact is there is clearly an anti-Israel bias. And here's where history is important. This is something very, very big. And please hear me. I'm saying this as a Jewish believer in Jesus. I'm saying this as someone who knows so many Jewish believers in the land of Israel and around the world. One of the great, great obstacles to Jewish people receiving Jesus through the centuries, and for religious Jews receiving Jesus to this day, and for Jews who know their history receiving Jesus until this day, is horrible history of Christian anti-Semitism. Is the demonizing of Jews in Christian literature from the 2nd, 3rd century and beyond, and the discriminatory acts towards Jews as the church gained more power, whether it was a hypocritical church or a true church. The fact is, Jews just look at it as the church. And then the Crusades and the Inquisitions and the fertile ground of European Christian anti-Semitism. I have to say Christian in quotes because it obviously wasn't truly Christian. The fertile ground of European Christian anti-Semitism giving birth to the Holocaust, or providing, I should say, a place where the Holocaust could be birthed and could take place in Europe and Eastern Europe. All these things happen. All these things happen, okay? And now, after years and years and years of faithful support of the Jewish people and loving outreach to the Jewish people and showing genuine Christian love to the Jewish people, American evangelical Christians, perhaps Israel's best friends anywhere in the entire world, little by little, the wall is coming down. The Israeli government and others are recognizing this is genuine Christian love. More and more willingness to even hear the rest of the message about Jesus because they're seeing a demonstration of love. And now, when the wall's starting to come down, when progress is starting to be made, a movement in the name of Jesus opposes that and demonizes the Israelis and Jews and even gives fuel to the fire of anti-Semites. That's bad. That's tragic. That is anything but the spirit of Jesus, anything but the spirit of reconciliation. That's why I say it's so important to look at the history first, to look at the history first to give us a context for what is happening today. All right, let me go to the phones. Michelle in Broxton. We lost Michelle. Courageously calling in to differ, and we lost Michelle. All right, those are the voices I want to hear from today. So if you want to call just to say amen to me, say it from where you are. I'll feel it. I'll appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Stephen Sizer, Reverend Stephen Sizer, is a key voice, a key theological voice. At one time, I understand, a Christian Zionist, and then changed his views. But what is consistent in the critiques of Christian Zionism is that all Christian Zionists are thought to be dispensationalists. All Christian Zionists are thought to hold to a pre-trib theology. All Christian Zionists are traced back to roots in the mid-1800s as if this is a completely new movement. No, no. There were Puritans in the 1600s talking about God's purposes to restore the Jews to the land. There are voices throughout church history recognizing, oh yeah, minority, but recognizing God's purposes for the Jewish people and his purposes to regather and restore them. And there are millions of Christians, God knows the number, but many, many millions of Christians who believe that God is working in modern Israel today, who believe that God has restored the Jewish people to the land, that this is part of fulfillment of prophecy, who believe that ultimately there will be a turning of the Jewish people spiritually to the Lord for their salvation, and they are not dispensationalists. So the idea that you can attack all Christian Zionism or all standing with Israel in the name of Jesus and attack all of that as if it's all dispensational is very, very much misleading. And, of course, that happens throughout the entire video. Stephen Sizer says we get into trouble when we take general promises and apply them very specifically to historic events. Well, maybe there are specific words. When God said about the Jewish people, I will scatter you in my anger and regather you in my mercy, is that just general or is that specific? Did they genuinely get scattered? Yes. Did they genuinely suffer the anger of the Lord? Yes. Are they genuinely being regathered? Yes. This is not taking a general promise and applying it to historic events as if not true. This is taking a specific promise and applying it to historic and present events because it is true. Here, Ezekiel 36 begins to find its fulfillment with the return of the Jewish people from the Babylonian exile. Why did God bring our people back to the land after the Babylonian captivity? Because of our righteousness? Because of our repentance? No, because God's name was being blasphemed, and because God had a purpose in doing it, ultimately to glorify his name among the nations. It's the same reason he's been bringing the Jewish people back to the land today. In unbelief, without repenting. Why? Because of his purposes and because of his mercy. And then in the land, clean water being sprinkled on them. Many of them are repenting and coming to faith.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Those just tuning in, I am continuing my critique of the With God on Our Side video and then raising larger issues about God's working in Israel today and issues of justice between Jew, Palestinian, Arab in the Middle East. I'm spending 2 hours on this. This will be the final word on this until we can have some of the folks that were involved with the video or have the other perspective willing to join me on the air to talk things through. So we did this last week. This week, you can catch all of it then online at AskDrBrown.org by clicking on the Line of Fire. So we've got a lot more to cover. I'll be doing that in the next hour. So again, you can catch all of that online. Remember, you can also subscribe by podcast. Let me try to get to one caller, though. Eric and Kristen. Look at this, boy. Everyone we line up. Hal, just be checking more diligently to make sure these folks are with us. Everybody we line up with a critical view who's going to differ with me disappears. We're not doing it. Trust me, we're not doing it. And it's not like last Friday when someone called in with a question about aliens, and the next thing the phones were ringing off the hook with people wanting to talk about aliens, and then suddenly people on three lines just disappeared, just were gone. My only explanation was that they were abducted. We didn't do this, though. I'm just having fun with that. Okay. You know, a gentleman named Al Jansen, co-author of Light Force, stated on the video that there are more Palestinian Christians than there are Christians in Israel, which he traces back to Acts 2, speaking of Arabs in Acts 2. What that caused me to wonder about was that's Jews there. Acts 2 is talking about Jewish Arabs. How does that then get applied to Palestinian Gentile Christians? Just wondering. If you're going to say that it's 2,000 years back, you've got Palestinian Christians or Arab Christians, and here it goes back to Acts 2 that mentioned Arabs, though it's Arabic-speaking Jews who are mentioned in Acts 2. And they lived in the surrounding Arab lands, or the lands where you'd speak Arabic. Huh, that's interesting. Was that just an oversight? I wonder. There's no question. Salim Munayer talks about sharing a church that he's from Israel and so on, and afterwards someone came up to him, wanted to bless him. Oh, I'm so glad you shake the hand of a Jew. And he said, I'm not a Jew, I'm Palestinian. The person wouldn't shake his hand. I mean, that's an outrage. That's horrific. That's inexcusable. Let's talk about how Jews are often treated and have been treated by professing Christians around the world for centuries and say, yeah, what happened to Salim is horrific, but let us renounce the evil on the other side. I know that wasn't the intent of the video, but admit that it's there. And perhaps the problem was Salim not recognizing that when we say Palestinian here in America, there is a strong association with Palestinian terrorism. There is a strong association with Yasser Arafat. There is a strong association with the fact that it was Hamas in Gaza who was bemoaning the death of Osama bin Laden, the killing of Osama bin Laden. That when Saddam Hussein was dropping scuds in Israel, that Palestinians were celebrating, and after 9/11 they were celebrating. Not all, but perhaps. If you had said, I'm a Christian, I'm a Middle Eastern Christian, I'm a Palestinian Christian, or I'm an Arab Christian living in the land, it might have brought a different response. Nonetheless, it is inexcusable and wrong. And yet, yes, that part's important, getting a heart for Palestinians, but not by demonizing Israel by falsehoods and other things, misrepresentations, as the video does throughout. Here, Professor Gary Bird says this: we as evangelicals have endorsed an Israeli domestic policy that has placed more than 3 million people under military occupation and has created the largest refugee population in the entire world. And you have to ask yourself, why is this defended by the Christian church? How is it that we don't see the suffering of so many people who are made in the image of God? Because Israel is not the culprit here. Because there is a history from the start that has wanted to wipe Israel off the map and kick the Jews into the sea. And it remains strong in much of the Muslim world and among many Palestinians today. And the reason there is not a mutual peaceful coexistence is because one side said, we are going to kill you and drive you out, with the support of the surrounding Arab world, which rather than lifting a finger to solve the refugee problem and welcoming Palestinian refugees into their borders, in certain cases expelled Palestinians, even by the hundreds of thousands, from their borders. Don't point the finger at Israel's guilt here. And in point of fact, Israelis tend to be fairly humanistic. Most Israelis are not religious Jews. They are more secular Jews, but with a sense of heritage and a sense of connection to the land and a sense of some concept of God, even if they are not religious Jews. But they tend to be largely humanistic. And if they could live peacefully with their neighbors without having to send all of their kids, male and female, into battle, into war, into the army for 3 years, without having to be searched when you go into a mall. I mean, think of those of you who don't like flying, don't like having to go through security and put stuff through X-ray and so on. That's just normal life for Israelis, and having security outside of a cafeteria, a cafe, and soldiers, just because you never know if someone's going to try to come in and blow you up, and people don't know if perhaps you are a terrorist coming in. That's normal life. Do you think the Israelis like that? Do you think the Israelis desire that? The fact is, if there was a peaceful solution, the great majority would go for it. So with all respect, Professor Burge, I know you have a heart for the disenfranchised. I know you have a heart for people who are hurting. I know you have a heart for justice. I know you're a serious biblical New Testament scholar. I don't doubt that. But statements like this are so imbalanced and so forgetting history, and so not understanding the worldwide anti-Semitic spirit that is out to destroy the Jewish people, that they disqualify themselves as far as being effective. As to the call to treat Palestinians, Palestinian Christians, with compassion, and to stand in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in what are wrongly called the occupied territories, amen. I'm all for it. Let's work together towards that goal. Hey, friends. Once more, if you believe in what we're doing here on the Line of Fire, if you're blessed by the program, just got another wonderful email of someone so encouraged and changed by listening to the broadcast. That blesses us, that blesses our team here. We work together sacrificially to get the show out to you to make a difference. If you believe in what we're doing and want to help us reach Jewish people with the gospel, stand for spiritual revival, moral cultural revolution, missions around the world, all of what we do on a daily basis here, give us a call at 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. Your one-time gift or becoming a monthly torchbearer will hold our hands up, encourage us. Once more, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line: God certainly loves all people. God certainly loves Jews and Palestinians. God certainly loves Muslims, Christians, atheists, all peoples. But we must ask ourselves, what is God doing in the earth today? We must ask ourselves, has God made promises that he is keeping? We must ask ourselves, what is the side of scripture and prophecy and the side of justice, and put those two sides together. If you really want to produce a video that points to reconciliation, do you do it by untruths? Do you do it by exaggerations? Do you do it by demonizing a people? I say no.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. I'm pressing in and focusing on some very, very important issues raised in an important video with God on our side, a video that ultimately calls for reconciliation, calls for a Christian attitude towards Jew and Muslim, Jew and Palestinian, Israeli-Palestinian alike, but, in my judgment, does the opposite. Produces a spirit away from reconciliation, produces an attitude that demonizes the people of Israel, and even has a wrong theology behind it. Hence my taking extra time last week and this week to talk about it on the air. I would love to hear from you if you differ with me. I'd love to hear from you if you saw the video and you agreed with it or it raised questions for you. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear from you if fundamentally you don't believe that Israel today is a fulfillment of prophecy or that God has lasting promises to the Jewish people as a nation. I would love to hear from you. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I spent an hour on this already, but I'm going to cover different ground in the second hour. So to get both hours, later today, go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, and click on The Line of Fire, and you can listen to both hours. If you missed last week's show, I encourage you to listen to that, as well as I was joined by a friend and former student from Israel, Shani Ferguson. Okay, the charges throughout this video are very simple, that Israel today is guilty of great injustice against the Palestinians, and therefore it is wrongheaded for Christians to stand with Israel, especially unconditionally. What they should do is say, we're not standing with either side, we're standing for truth and justice, and reach out in love, and call both sides to justice. The video, sadly, until right at the end when it speaks of reconciliation, after producing an attitude the exact opposite of that the whole way through, and presenting people in a very bad light the whole way through, the video, unfortunately, takes a stand against Israel and with the Palestinians. I say unfortunately because it doesn't do it based on historical accurate truth, and it doesn't do it based on real justice. Listen to what Reverend Stephen Sizer says. Look at the comparison that he makes, clip number 3.
One-sided support leads to an uncritical endorsement of that side's behavior. And at the moment, the majority view in America is that Israel is on our side, is a democracy, is surrounded by belligerent nations, needs our political support, needs our financial and military support, and therefore is justified in its harsh actions toward the Palestinians. It's the same script 100 years ago when the settlers were justifying the ethnic cleansing of North America of the indigenous Red Indians. You know, they were savages, and therefore somehow they weren't like us, they were not civilized. It was the same argument used by the colonizers in Africa, you know, the idea that the blacks were somehow less human or less intelligent than the whites. That use of eugenics and Darwinian theory is used subtly in the Middle East. And you see this in the way books describe the Arab as, for example, as a natural liar. Somehow their worldview, their image, they may be very hospitable, but you can't trust them. They're Arabs.
It's an extraordinary quote. Now, that is not on the video itself. This is on Stephen Sizer's website where he talks about things on the video. That's an extraordinary quote. To say that what Israel's doing again is compared to ethnic cleansing, and then to say it's just like what the Americans did, American settlers, to the Native Americans. Amazing. We'll talk about it. Stay with us.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I find it mind-boggling after, 2,300 plus years of anti-Semitism and demonizing of Jews and Jews being painted in all types of subhuman ways. And to this day, in Islamic theology, Jews being considered to be the children of monkeys and pigs, that Reverend Stephen Sizer can say that it's the Jewish view that is demonizing the Arabs as a lesser people in the Middle East. Can I remind you that 1.5 million or so Arabs live as citizens in Israel today, and they are fully involved in the society. They are in the parliament. They are sitting as judges, and on and on. And many of them display hostility towards the Jewish majority because of their Arab-Muslim history and culture, and yet they are full citizens, equal players. I think I should read this again. I read it in the first hour. I'll read this again. A quote from David Ben-Gurion. This was his view of what was to happen in terms of the modern state of Israel. This is how he envisaged Jewish-Arab relationships in the prospective Jewish state and in the wider Middle East. We must think in terms of a state, in terms of independence, in terms of full responsibility for ourselves and for others. In our state, there will be non-Jews as well, and all of them will be equal citizens, equal in everything without any exception. The state will be their state as well. The attitude of the Jewish state to its Arab citizens will be an important factor, though not the only one, in building good neighborly relations with the Arab states. If the Arab citizen will feel at home in our state, and if his status will not be in the least different from that of the Jew, and perhaps better than the status of the Arab in an Arab state, and if the state will help him in a truthful and dedicated way to reach the economic, social, and cultural level of the Jewish community, then Arab distrust will accordingly subside, and a bridge to a Semitic Jewish-Arab alliance will be built. The striving for a Jewish-Arab alliance necessitates us to fulfill several obligations, which we are obliged to do in any event. Full and real equality, de jure and de facto, of all the state citizens, graduated equalization of the economic, social, and cultural standard of living of the Arab community with that of the Jewish community, recognition of the Arab language as the language of the Arab citizens in the administration, courts of justice, and above all, schools, municipal autonomy, and villages and cities, etc. Those Arabs that stayed in the land have now enjoyed those benefits and are co-citizens with the Jews living in Israel. It is those who said the Jews cannot stay here, the Jews do not have a right to exist, the Jews do not have a right to a state, the ones who became part, sadly, of the refugee problem without the help from the surrounding Arab nations, rather with the exacerbation of the surrounding Arab nations. They're the ones that are suffering today. But don't put the onus on Israel, put the onus on the anti-Israel mentality that wanted to destroy and wants to destroy the Jews to this day. And if it's a matter of ethnic cleansing, if it's ethnicity, the same blood of the Palestinians is the same blood of the Arabs. In other words, it is Arab blood, right? Not Jewish blood, not Asian blood, not American blood, but Arab blood. They are ethnic Arabs. If there was a matter of ethnic cleansing, then why are there 1.5 million Arab-Israeli citizens? Oh, boy. 866-34-TRUTH, if you'd like to differ with me. Of course, the idea that Genesis 12, where God says, I'll bless those who bless you, that can in any way be applied to Jewish people or Israel today, is fully rejected. Ultimately, what is stated is this on the video, that we can't apply an Old Testament promise to today without putting it through the grid of the New Testament. Otherwise, we act as if the New Testament were never written. Genesis 12 doesn't have any political consequences. Israel finds its destiny fulfilled in Jesus to the point that Israel's national identity is no longer important. And since Paul teaches that we're all children of Abraham by faith, therefore, it has nothing to do with the ethnic Jewish people anymore. Well, I understand those arguments and those sentiments, but here's the problem, friends. If the Old Testament prepares the way for the new, if what's written in the Old Testament finds its fulfillment, not abolishment in the new, but its fulfillment in the new, and if the gifts and calling of God are irrevocable, Romans 11, 28, 29, if even though the Jewish people as a whole, as far as the gospel, Paul writes, then are enemies because of the fathers, because of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they're still loved. And next verse, the gifts and calling of God are irrevocable. Therefore, the promises that God made to Israel, to the Jewish people, still stand. Well, we find God dealing harshly with the nations who mistreated his people, even when they were under judgment. We find that in the Old Testament. Show me where the New Testament abolishes that principle. Show me where the New Testament now says it doesn't matter how you treat the Jews because Jesus has come into the world. Please show me the logic with that. And show me how if the old, if we're just talking broadly, all right, the old prepares the way for the new, how the new can now invalidate the old. If it does, then it's not reliable. Look, Deuteronomy 13, God laid out for Israel that if someone comes, a dreamer of dreams or a prophet, miracle worker, and what they say comes to pass or there's a miracle and they say follow other gods, don't do it. You're being tested. And in other words, the later revelation can't now come and undo the prior revelation. It has to be in harmony with, it has to support, it has to build out. And that, sadly, is forgotten. Yes, I still believe that God does look at how people treat the Jewish people in Israel, because there is a unique identification of God with the people of Israel. Look, through history, we have God's view of Jewish history or Israelite history more than any other people, and we have been judged by God more than any other people. And if you think of it, the people of India and the people of China, over 1 billion strong today, the people of Israel, just as ancient in terms of their ethnicity and origins, and what, maybe 14 million people. A tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of the number of Chinese and Indians in the world today. We have been judged. We have been purged. We have suffered. But even when we have been in the wrong, God still judged other nations who overdid the punishment against us. God still judged other nations for cruelty against us. And there's great evidence, as nations and individuals have stood with Israel and the Jewish people, that they have been blessed. I still believe in a very real way that there is a dividing line that Israel brings, that the Jewish people bring to the world today. Sadly, there is growing and ongoing anti-Semitism, Jew hatred around the world today. And Christians need to recognize what is going on. We need to be spiritually alert and awake, need to understand what is happening so that we can stand with God on the side of justice. Oh, yes, there are legitimate needs among Palestinians living in the land today. Legitimate needs, no argument about that, but the needs will be met when they recognize Israel as a Jewish state and put their weapons down. The only reason there's a wall up is to keep murderers out, not to appropriate more territory. 866-34-TRUTH. Joey, I'm going to wait on clip number one. I don't have time for clip number two, so we'll get to clip number two on the other side of the break. I want you to hear an interview with a BBC and the mayor of Jerusalem, just so you get an idea of what Israel has to deal with all around the world. Reverend Stephen Sizer on the video rejects the idea that the Jews are chosen people anymore, claiming that the New Testament exclusively uses the term for believers in Jesus only, never for a racial group. Well, the problem is that, quoted Paul saying they're still beloved on account of the fathers, and the gifts and calling of God are irrevocable. Isn't the word calling in there? And isn't it an explicit reference to Israel? And doesn't Paul say how God will fulfill his promises and purposes to physical, literal Israel in Romans, the 11th chapter? Could it be any more explicit than the way Paul lays it out? Which is why almost all top Romans commentaries today recognize that. When he says all Israel will be saved, he's not talking about the church. He's not talking about Jews and Gentiles together there. He's talking about a turning, a national turning of the Jewish people. I don't want to get too technical, especially for those who have no background in this. But there's something on the video that really stuns me. And again, it's from a top New Testament scholar, a man who certainly has a heart for justice, but I believe he's just very much on the wrong side of this issue. He asked, do we have a one covenant theology or a two covenant theology? that the one covenant theology says that there's always been people that God's been dealing with, and that now finds its fulfillment in Jesus. And he says the two covenant theology says that Jews have another way to be saved. And that implies that if you say that God still has purposes for Israel today, not implies, actually states it directly. If you believe God still has purposes for Israel today, even if they need to be saved through Jesus, somehow this is dual covenant. I was shocked watching this on the video, thinking, how in the world can a top New Testament scholar present things in these terms? That if you do not hold to the position he holds to, you're holding to a dual covenant theology as if Jews can be saved without faith in Jesus. Come on. We've got to do better than this, friends.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you, continuing and finishing our critique of the video With God on Our Side. I am all for questioning modern Israel in terms of how it treats people. I am all for raising questions of justice for Palestinians. I'm all for examining our theology. I am not for imbalanced and misleading videos that produce hostility rather than a spirit of reconciliation. 866-34-TRUTH. Before we go to the phones, this is an interview on BBC with the mayor of Jerusalem. It's a couple minutes. I want us to listen to it. Get a feel for what has to be dealt with and even the hostile approach towards him and how just something as simple as the status of Jerusalem, of course, complex to many, how much this has to be fought for.
There was another not-an-inch mayor of Jerusalem not so long ago, name of Ehud Olmert. This is what he said back in 1997 when he was mayor. The solution to Jerusalem is the one elaborated 3,000 years ago. Jerusalem is one city, united city, the capital of Israel, period. What other kind of solution can there be? Similar to what you have been saying.
Okay.
This is what he said just a month or so ago as a former Prime Minister of Israel. All the countries of the enlightened world, as well as the overwhelming majority of the American public, support the separation of the Arab neighborhoods in Jerusalem from Israeli sovereignty. This is inevitable, and it's also the right move for those who wish to maintain Israel's capital as a Jewish city. There's no escaping it. As Jerusalem's former mayor, I know this well, and it's possible those who refuse to discuss it terminate the chances for a peace process. To use the businessman's that you like, is it not time to cut your losses and face reality?
There's no such thing. There's no working model. I come from the business world. Show me a working model of a split city that ever works.
Well, there's no other city like Jerusalem.
That's my point. No city at all that has ever split that worked. They either stay dysfunctional or get reunited. Jerusalem, there's no way, when you learn and understand the city, you understand that it can never be divided. Not practically, and not ideologically.
If that logic were at all widely accepted, do you not think that it would be endorsed by just one government somewhere in the world? How many embassies are there in Jerusalem?
Look, I agree with you that the challenge we have is to get the world to better understand what is happening on the ground. Look, the world doesn't understand the Middle East.
How many embassies are there in Jerusalem?
Three or four.
Are there?
Yeah.
But not a single one is listed on your government's website.
Well, fine.
Do you know which three or four there are?
Yeah. I don't remember by heart, but it's not the big countries of the world.
Well, from what I understand, there isn't a single embassy.
Okay.
Does that not give you pause for thought?
Of course I'm concerned about it. If you ask me, I would prefer the governments of the world.
Does that not make you think that perhaps your reasoning is wrong?
No, on the contrary. And, you know, the fact I've learned in my career that the majority is not always right. And the majority is not looking into the details. You know, when I heard about you talked earlier about the freeze in the city of Jerusalem. Freeze what? Freeze by race? How do you make the city work better from remotely and far away? There are all kinds of theoretical models. And I've learned that for every complex problem, there's one simple wrong answer. The world is looking for a simple solution to such an important city that was never divided.
So the amazing thing is, the guy on BBC, rather than recognizing that there is worldwide hostility to Israel and the Jewish people and Jerusalem, rather than recognizing that and saying, let's do something about that and recognize this capital, instead points to this worldwide attitude against Jerusalem and Jewish people and points to that to say, give it up, divide the city, give it up. All right, to the phones, Timothy in Atlanta, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, the first time listener. I'm just curious as to, and I'm asking this out of all honesty, with the exception of Hamas, which we know is wrong, regardless of however you look at it, where else in the world are Jewish people and anti-Semitism just rampant, and who is doing it?
Sure, radical Islam all around the world. So Hezbollah,
right. that's
Hamas, Palestinian Authority, Iran. So you've got, remember, about a billion and a half Muslims worldwide, and a good 20-30% would espouse to the radical ideology. So that's a big chunk of the world right there. Then throughout Europe, there's rising anti-Semitism. There's vandalism of synagogues and graves in places like France and in Berlin. Jews, religious Jews, are sometimes afraid to walk down the streets wearing a yarmulke, a head covering. So all over the world, it's well documented, massive anti-Semitism on the same levels as before the Holocaust. And many places in the world, right now there's an increasing call to boycott Israeli businesses, to kick Israelis out of malls as they're selling their items in malls. It's all over the place. Some of it's violent, some of it's ideological, but it's very, very present. And Israel has very, very few friends in the world today.
Is most of it coming? I mean, I know that Europe is almost all, I'm not going to say almost all, but I know a great part of Europe has been taken over by Islam, and so is a great part of Germany. So what we're dealing with still is the same mindset as Hamas, as Iran, as anyone who is of that spirit.
No, actually, it's a secularism there. It's in other words, this has nothing to do with Islam. In these countries, what I'm talking about is not Muslim sponsored. It's look, the Holocaust took place in these different countries and it had nothing to do with Islam. Islamic radicals were in harmony with it. So there's just a worldwide anti-Semitic spirit attitude. Hey Timothy, you're a first time listener. And you've called right in the first time, which is awesome. I wrote a book some years ago about anti-Semitism in church history and then anti-Semitism worldwide. It's called Our Hands Are Stained with Blood. I'd like to send you the book as a gift, all right? Because I'm out of time. I've got a break here. But if you'd let me send you this book as a gift, I think it'll give you further insight on what's happening. How's that?
I would appreciate that. Great.
All right. Stay on hold, Timothy. I really appreciate the question. Hey, come on. First-time caller. First-time listener and called right in. Way to go, man. 866-34-TRUTH. I've got a clip I want to play for you on the other side of the break that you don't want to miss. Something that's happening now, increasing measure around the world. And if you don't have the book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, get a copy of it. Go online. Any online bookstore has it. You can get it from our website, AskDrBrown.org. Get a copy of Our Hands Are Stained with Blood. And if you believe in what we're doing, if you want to stand with us, if you want to hold our hands up, this is a listener-supported broadcast. Your one-time gift, your monthly support is welcome. You can write to us and send a gift to P.O. Box 5546. So Line of Fire, P.O. Box 5546, Concord, North Carolina, 28027. That's P.O. Box 5546, Concord, North Carolina, 28027.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution.
Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Great to be with you today, friends, as we finish our critique of the video With God on Our Side, purporting to be a video about reconciliation and forgiveness, but one which unfortunately stirs up all kinds of hostility against Israel and the Jewish people and presents a shockingly incomplete view of Christian Zionism as well, and misses the larger context of God's dealing with the Jewish people, hence a video that I thoroughly discourage the viewing of, except to see a wrong presentation. And my invitation remains for those I'm differing with on the video to join me on the air. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH, in particular if you differ with me, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. One of the most disturbing moments of the video is when Pastor John Hagee quotes from Isaiah 62 and says, "We must stand with Israel." And in contrast with that, Professor Gary Burge says that in the past, the church has always lived to regret every time it's been asked to adopt a political agenda by the world. And then Christians standing with Israel today gets compared with the crusaders of the past. Now, look, I'm very non-political in terms of my orientation. You know, I don't put a lot of stock in either party, although I've voted Republican more than Democrat in recent years. I don't put stock in either party. My heart is to advance the kingdom and see Jesus glorified, period. And as far as the Middle East, the idea that Israel is just taking a political agenda, or Christian Zionists are just endorsing a political agenda, and to be likened to the Crusaders, the Crusaders fought down Muslim and Jewish resistance. And in the summer of 1099, the Jews fleeing for safety into the great synagogue in Jerusalem were burned alive, burned to death by the Crusaders, whose uniforms bore the image of the cross. And as the Crusaders marched around the synagogue, historians recount that they chanted and sang, "Christ, we adore thee," as the Jews were burned to death in the synagogue. This happened. There's one or two mention of how Christians in history, abysmal treating of Israel, the Jewish people, it's just been abysmal, without recognizing how horrifically offensive it is to say that those standing with Israel today, not saying kill the Palestinians or destroy the Palestinians, but saying let Israel have a place to live in the Middle East. Let Israel have a place of its own. Let Israel have its ancient and only capital again. To liken those standing with Israel to the Crusaders is amazing. It's amazing. It is distressing and nothing less. 866-34-TRUTH. Tell you what, before I go to the phones, this is what's happening in different parts of the world today. This is a mall in Australia where there are protests now, protests against Israelis doing their vending in the malls. Israelis are very social, and you'll often see them selling products in the mall, Dead Sea Scroll products, other things like that. Our broadcast, our office building is near a major mall in North Carolina, and you see Israelis everywhere. In fact, we've reached out to them and even interacted in our homes with some of them. Now, in Australia, New Zealand, different countries, they're trying to get the Israelis kicked out of the mall. Listen to what happened in a mall in Australia. They're in the food court of a mall, and spontaneously, that's the plan to start the chant, "We will boycott Israel," as if Israel is the evil entity in the Middle East. You don't hear calls for boycotts of the nations trying to wipe the Jewish people out, but calls to boycott Israel. Why? Why?
Cleansing flame, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
There is another claim that's made on the video with God on our side that Christians visiting Bethlehem don't visit the Palestinian Christians, and they're really suffering because of this. Well, of course, most Christians visiting Palestine or visiting Bethlehem, excuse me, or quote, going to holy sites and are in and out, and it's more of a touristy kind of thing. But the idea that the Christians, Palestinian Christians in Bethlehem, are suffering because of Israel somehow is just a falsehood. The suffering is because of Islamic takeover, by and large, of Bethlehem. Reverend Stephen Sizer encourages people, yes, visit Israel, visit Palestine, visit the church there. Does he also mean visit Messianic Jewish congregations, get to know them, hear their hearts, find out what they're doing, as well as reconciliation? And he says the Middle Eastern church is hemorrhaging. But why is it hemorrhaging? It's not hemorrhaging because of Israel. It's hemorrhaging because of radical Islam. It's radical Islam that wiped out, by and large, the population of a thriving church in Asia and parts of Africa, especially, different parts of Africa and in Asia in the 13th century. It's radical Islam that's making life miserable for Christians in their countries. I'm talking about genuine born-again Christians. Not Israel. Israel is not the primary reason that these things are happening. One woman mentions attending a Messianic Jewish congregation, and she got the impression that the Arabs were the ones who were keeping Israel from having their rightful homeland. Well, I would agree with that, that at least the radicals and the ones driving the ideology, I would agree with that. But she said a turning point for her was when a friend said to her that it's fine to have a political point of view, but not when it prejudices your views against other peoples, in which case you lose the heart of God. Yes, which is the very thing this video is doing. It's prejudicing you. With God on our side, is prejudicing you against Israel, prejudicing you against the people of Israel, not trying to give you sympathy. Well, the viewpoint would be, well, they're already getting that. You already have the Christian Zionist viewpoint. You already have the propaganda view. Well, if you believe it's falsehood, then don't fight falsehood with falsehood. If you believe it's wrong to demonize a people, then don't demonize the other people to undemonize the one. Present balanced truth, not misleading things and misleading images. No, don't do that. Again, Professor Gary Burge, I want to quote this again. Am I going to look at the Middle East, this is his question, as a Christian, look at it through the lens of prophecy? Or am I going to look at the Middle East as a Christian and look at it through the lens of justice? Look at it through both. If God has spoken prophetically, then we should know what he's saying. If Zechariah 12, which clearly has not yet been fulfilled, and Zechariah 14, which clearly has not yet been fulfilled, speak of all the nations coming against Jerusalem and being brought by God to launch war against Jerusalem and the Jewish people, and then being defeated, and then the survivors of the nations going on to worship the God of Israel, should I take seriously that it speaks of that? Or do I just throw that out? And perhaps most disturbing of all to me, unless I missed an earlier reference, it was 1 hour and 14 minutes into this video, which is devoted to reconciliation, forgiveness, not taking sides. Ostensibly, I say it does the opposite for the most part. That 1 hour and 14 minutes into it, there is the first reference, and basically the only reference, to the Holocaust. It's a statement from a professor who's with Amnesty International, and how the Jews have been terribly mistreated in the diaspora and Holocaust, and how Christians have participated in that treatment and has been abysmal. He says it's been abysmal on some levels. And Christians need to ask forgiveness of the Jews. Does he not realize how Christian love for Israel today is helping undo the stench of anti-Semitism in church history? And does he not realize that the systematic slaughter of two-thirds of European Jews also fuels the fire and the desire and the need for homeland? And how the Muslim world was pro-Hitler before the establishing of the State of Israel? And how Hitler, to get Muslim support and others, helped draw on the anti-Jewish, anti-Israel ideology and theology that was already in Quran and Islamic literature. Is that not realized? You cannot look at the history of the land today. You cannot look at Jewish history without looking back at these other massive, massively important issues, which color the whole landscape. Sadly, the video does anything but that. And as I say, rather than promoting forgiveness, reconciliation, promotes hostility to Israel, a straw man argument of why Christians support Israel and the Jewish people, attributing it all to dispensationalist premillennialism and nothing else, as if there aren't other streams, massive streams that exist, and giving one side of the story a misleading, a biased story, leaving out essential important facts about Israel and the Jewish people today. 866-34-TRUTH. Gibson in Miami, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello, Michael.
Hello.
How you doing?
Doing very well, thank you. How about you?
I'm doing very great. It's my first time calling. I'm really glad to be on the show. I just had a question. I'm a Christian, and I believe that, you know, God desires that as Christians we should be concerned for the salvation of all peoples, not just Jews, but whites, blacks, you know, everybody who's on the face of the earth. I believe that this is God's desire. One question, one concern that I have is the nation of Israel itself. From what I understand, the nation of Israel as a collective whole does not acknowledge the lordship of Christ or the kingship of Christ, if I'm correct.
Absolutely now, correct.
Right. So now my question is, knowing that we as Christians all over the world, whether it's in America or Germany or wherever, I wanted to know, how should that shape the way we view Israel, the way we pray for them, the way we interact, knowing that Israel as a nation does not acknowledge Christ in their government?
Sure. Great question. So three things. First, recognize that they're still chosen and called even when they're in ignorance and disobedience. They may be under judgment and not blessing. They may be under discipline and not blessing. But Paul lays out plainly in Romans, the 11th chapter, verses 28 and 29, which culminates a very, very important discussion in Romans 9 through 11, that he explains that even though the Jewish people in his day were enemies on account of the gospel, they were beloved on account of the patriarchs. And he then goes on to say, for the gifts and calling of God are irrevocable. So God said that he would scatter his people. God said that he would regather them. This is God, the sovereign king, working whether people recognize him or not. So that's the first thing, to recognize the calling remains, which is why the Jewish people remain. Jeremiah chapter 31, verses 35 through 37, God makes clear that as long as heaven and earth endure, that his promises to Israel will endure, and no matter what they do, he'll still keep them as a nation. So we are small in number because we've often been under judgment, and we've been disciplined, and we've been attacked, and there's been a satanic desire to wipe us out. But we are still, I say, as a Jew myself, still have that corporate national calling. That's the first thing. And I think of Cyrus when God says, I've called you, even though you don't know me. Here's a pagan king God called, even though he didn't know him. So first thing. Second thing is, God said in Ezekiel 36 and other passages that he would bring his people back to the land in unbelief. He'd bring his people back to the land even when they were still in sin. Not for their sake, but for the sake of his name, which is being blasphemed, and so that he would ultimately be glorified in the nations. So we recognize that God is at work to bring his people back into the land, even without repentance. If they had repented, he's promised their return, but at times he'll work, like after the Babylonian exile 2,500 years ago, and brought our people back to the land, even without repentance. And that leads to number three, which is the biggest and most important, and ties in with the first point that you made. The strongest thing we must do is pray for their salvation. The number one thing we must do is pray for the salvation of the Jewish people in the land of Israel and around the world. Of course, I'm with you, praying for the salvation of all people and seeking to win all people. In fact, grads from our school, we have more grads who've been serving in the Muslim world and Arab nations than serving in Israel, actually. So our heart is for the nations. But we must pray and believe, in accordance with Ezekiel 36, that God says, I will bring you back to the land and then sprinkle clean water on you. So the good news, Gibson, is that more and more Jews living in Israel are coming to faith. More and more Jews are turning their hearts to the Lord. And when God says, as he restores them, he'll be glorified in the nations, it's interesting to see how, since the Jewish people have been back in the land, we have seen the greatest harvest of souls on the mission field around the world, which I don't think is a coincidence at all. So that's how we should approach it. Recognize God's at work, but recognize there are people who need Jesus and put their salvation at the top of our list. All right?
All right.
Thank you for calling, sir. God bless you, and thanks for listening. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, Frank in Philadelphia, you're next, but unless you want to talk for like 3 seconds, let's wait until after the break, and we'll come back and hear what's on your mind. And I've got a few closing thoughts as well about with God on our side, hopefully a constructive way to move forward.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
See, this is the type of stuff that concerns me. Here's an endorsement of the video with God on our side. This was posted March 26, 2010 on Stephen Sizer's website. Again, I'm not demonizing these men I differ with. I know they want to please the Lord and honor him. Just as they put out their differences, I'm putting out my differences with them. And once again, inviting anyone involved with the video to join me on the air here. But here's an endorsement by Steve Haas, Vice President of World Vision, one of the great ministries of compassion, Christian compassion in the world, extraordinary organization. He said, the first obvious challenge of With God on Our Side was articulating a perspective on the Middle East debate anchored in history and sound theology. Porter Speakman has not only met that test, but also delivered one of the clearest assessments of the struggle between Palestinians and Jews, and a U.S. church largely unaware of their complicity in the current conflict. Speakman's second more ominous challenge will be obtaining an audience often steeped with established notions, open to wrestling with the film's content. The hope of an ongoing Christian presence in the Holy Land may depend on the success of his message. I dare anyone to see this film and remain unchanged. What a shame. What a shame. This is not based on solid history and sound theology. But more importantly, those who want to differ with me on that, it is not based on a fair representation that will give people a heart for justice for the whole region. And I will dare say again that the issue of a Christian presence in the Holy Land, the problem is not with Israel. It is with Islam. All right, I've got time to talk to Frank from Philadelphia. Thanks for calling today.
Hey, Dr. Brown, how are you?
Blessed. Thank you, Frank. How about you?
I'm doing great. I wanted to say I think you're doing a wonderful job. I got a lot of respect for you. I have one question, though, okay? It sounds like every time I turn you on the radio, we're talking about the persecution of Israel. It's never going to stop. It's in the Bible. Satan's not going to quit. So I don't understand why we're all so surprised. And what are we actually doing to stop it? Like, instead of, we got all these debates going on and we're talking about on the radio, but what is actually happening? And what can we physically do? Or is prayer the actual physical thing to do?
Yeah, you know, Frank, first, thanks for the kind words. You know, what's funny is folks will call in and say whenever they turn the radio on, I'm talking about homosexual issues, or whenever they turn the radio on, I'm talking about revival, or whenever they turn the radio on, I'm talking about...
Anyway, I'm
glad at least the messages are getting out. But because Satan is on the attack, we are speaking up. In other words, because this is happening, it is something that we need to address. That's one. Two, prayer is the number one thing we can do. Pray for God's purposes. Pray that what Satan means for evil, God will turn for good. But I agree with you that this is not going away. So what we have to do is stand up for justice and speak the truth. So the purpose of a show like this is to speak the truth so that people don't come away with wrong biases, that they don't vote the wrong way, that they don't act the wrong way, and to call on Christians to show solidarity and support for Israel, not to say that we endorse every Israeli policy, but to say we believe God has his hand on you, we believe he's brought you back to the land, we are standing with you. Now, of course, wherever we can stand with Palestinians and help them, we do that. But the good news is, Frank, that the Christian voice of love for Israel is being heard, that the skepticism that many Israelis and the government had towards Christians and many religious Jews, like, I don't know about these guys. I think this is they're just waiting for us to play along with their script, and we have to get saved before Jesus comes back. And what if we don't play along with their script? They won't love us anymore. Well, Christians have continued to love them, continued to show grace. And ultimately, even if we can't stop people from hating Jews, even if we can't stop anti-Semitism, we can bring the antidote by genuine Christian love, by acts of mercy, by getting involved with compassionate ways to serve people within the land and where there is injustice against Jews, to raise our voices. And that then turns to an open door to help us show them the love of God through Jesus. So it's both and in that respect. But, you know, look, our other choice is just throw our hands up and quit. And we know the devil's going to be raging. We know the world is going to be the world. We know the church is often going to be messed up. So what we got to do is get hold of God, be full of the Spirit ourselves, and do what's right, and pray. So, hey, Frank, thanks for calling, man. I got to run, but good talking to you, buddy.
Thank you, doctor. Have a great day.
All right. Well, let me try to conclude things here by saying my objections and concerns have been strong for a number of reasons in reacting to, responding to the With God on Our Side video. What I feel is a very biased presentation of past history and an interviewing of extremely radical people in certain cases without making it known how radical their positions are and without bringing other voices to clarify, to moderate, to bring the other side, to allow extreme statements to be made, you know, apartheid on steroids and things like that, or comparing Christian Zionists to the Crusaders and extreme things like that, to put them out at all, let alone to put them out without bringing the other side and without showing the atrocities that have been committed against Israelis, Jews living in the land, and without recognizing that the majority of Palestinians are not for a two-state solution. And those that are, many of them say, let's do it. Ultimately, there'll be one state, Palestine, period. And either Jews subject to us, or better still, Jews out or Jews dead. Come on, those are the facts. That is the sentiment. We can't get away from it. So if you want a spirit of forgiveness and reconciliation, pray that God would give you his heart for all the peoples in the region. And most books that I've read, books calling for prayer for Israel by Christian leaders, they've got very clear prayers. Here's how we pray for Muslims. Here's how we pray for those who identify as Palestinians. Here's how we stand with Palestinian Christians. It's not an either or, but it is recognizing God has promises. It is recognizing God has purposes. And rather than stepping back and realize that he has regathered the Jewish people and he has reestablished Jerusalem, and because of that there is world hatred against Israel and against Jerusalem, instead of recognizing that, this becomes now a battle against Israel and Christian Zionists, which really is a shame. So my invitation again to those involved, join me on the air for dialogue. If you don't trust the radio show as a good outlet, we'll set up a public discussion, dialogue, debate where we can have a few hours and go through these things side by side. And friends, those who appreciate what we're doing, please do pray for us. And if you could hold our hands up, that would be awesome. A one-time gift to help us reach the lost sheep of the house of Israel, to help spur revival in the church, to help raise up, send out missionaries, to help stand for moral cultural revolution. We do that 24/7 here in our ministry and our organization and through this broadcast, as you know, listening day by day. If you can help us, that would be amazing. That would be great. Become a torchbearer, monthly supporter. And if you do, we bless you in many ways, expressing our appreciation to you. So give us a call at 1-800-278-9978. Your one-time gift, helping this listener-supported broadcast or monthly torchbearer, 1-800-278-9978. My thanks to you in advance. My bottom line for today, God indeed is a God of truth and justice, and God indeed is a God who keeps his promises. And because he is a God of truth and justice, he will not break his promises. And he has promised to restore the Jewish people to the land. And he is doing it. And he has promised that there will be a national turning in faith to him in Jesus. Let's pray that the day would be hastened.